Hi, I'm Monse, and this is Musings of the Artist, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists.
You know, beauty is not optional. It's not soft. That it's really something that in leading a good life, a worthy life, a wise life, even a moral life, that it is something to insist on, to seek out, to weave in, you know, to tend to.
Sometimes the greatest cure for depression is, or that kind of depression that comes from experiencing certain events, is to do something, to do something, you know, to make some difference somehow, to have a positive effect on the world in some, even a small way.
If the shoe doesn't fit, you take it off. Of course you take it off. It doesn't worry you. It isn't your shoe.
Aren't you lonely living in Japan, speaking very limited Japanese in a very boring suburb in the middle of nowhere? And I know almost nobody except my wife and my friends I play ping pong with. But every day I go out onto our little terrace and I have this long conversation with Emily Dickinson or Virginia Woolf or Melville, and what a rich conversation. And as you were saying, no small talk there.
Exactly.
But they're sharing the deepest parts of their hearts, parts that are mysterious even to themselves, things that, their questions, their doubts, their terrors.
Yeah.
And then I, of course, as a reader, try to reciprocate in some ways. And I can't think of a richer exchange that I could have in the day than that.
Josh Tayez is a celebrity and food photographer based in LA. He has photographed artists like Nicole Kidman, David Lynch, Mary J. Blige, and gosh, so many others. Josh tells us about his path to becoming the photographer he is today. We chat about vulnerability in photo making, chronic anxiety, telling other people's stories through photography, post-creative depression, and much more. Josh!
Monty!
Hey!
Hi!
How are you doing today?
Today I'm doing well. I woke up in a good mood. I went to sleep, got some rest, and woke up in a good mood. Had some coffee. There was a little bit of Blink-182 playing at the coffee shop that I go to.
Ooh.
So me and some buds there got to rock out a little bit and, you know, fake mosh, and it was great. And now I get to talk to you. So I'm today's good.
Well, that's good to hear. I'm before we get into the conversation, because there's a million things I want to talk to you about. Why don't we start with you? I always like to start the podcast asking the guest to tell me who you are, because obviously I know who you are. but for the listeners, you know, beyond being you're a well-known photographer, but beyond that, how would you start to describe who you are beyond what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's try to knock that out. That's a hard self-diagnosis. I know we're going to therapy today. No, I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding. I guess how I usually describe myself is I'm like this very artistic introvert, or like extrovert. I'm an introvert that really loves people, you know?
Mm.
So I'm a photographer. I'm somebody who's interested in a ton of things. When I become interested in something, I just go all in. I love and I invest so much energy into it that when I'm, you know, after I invest all that energy, I like to sit and talk to nobody for days.
Yeah.
It's an interesting little thing, but it's a hard thing to try to sum up who you are in a little bit, but I guess I would say that I'm a photographer that loves a lot of things, and people are at the top of that list.
Yeah. And I would.
Yeah. I would say that's me.
From someone who's your friend, I would also just say you're just one of the kindest people I know, and very genuine, and unpretentious. You know, you have a lot of humility too. So yeah, I'll add those to the list of things you are.
Well, I appreciate that a ton. I think it kind of is a natural byproduct from actually liking people. Yeah. I know a lot of people that don't like people. And I think that, you know, I'm not to say that I'm the kindest, because I can definitely, like, you know, get me behind the wheel of a car and I turn into, you know, I have this saying that I've been saying a lot lately, and it's kind of humorous, but it's also like really true. It's like, I love people until they stop acting like people. When people start lose that kind of community essence, and I think that driving is a perfect analogy for it. Everybody's a car at that point. Nobody's, you know, you're a driver. You're not really a person. And so, like, everybody turns into somebody different. Not everybody. I turn into somebody different, you know, in a car. And I know a lot of people do as well, especially I mean, listen to me. I'm such an LA kid that all I do is talk about driving and in cars. But it really is true that, like, when people stop acting like people, like, you can kind of get the sense of hostility or lack of kindness, I guess. I don't know. I'm just rambling.
No, ramble on.
I'm just rambling.
I love that. No, it's true. It's true. It's like, yeah, people can kind of lose their humility, you know, it's like kind of, or humanity, you know, it's just like they're hiding behind it.
I've been saying that a lot in LA recently, especially, like, there's this intangible thing that I love about Los Angeles. And I think New York probably has it as well. Some of the bigger cities have it as well, but LA is such a place where everybody's on the brink of success and failure and dreams, and those dreams failing. And, you know, it's such there's so much riding on it that, like, there's an energy, right, that it almost commands from you. And you're around, so I'm a photographer, right? And I share an office with one of the best photographers in the entire world. And so you sit there and you have this, like, you're always on the brink of seeing the best person at what you do right next to you. And what that can do, if you take it as competition, is it can start to lose that essence of humanity, where people then start competing, or they start treating it all. So it's a beautiful thing, that energy that it creates, but it also is a really dangerous, slippery slope, where if you take it badly, you can really do some damage to some people. And I think that is kind of a gripe that I'm having with LA, you know, in a whole, is that we have this great energy, but sometimes people lose their humanity, and it's a bummer, because when you can hold on to that humanity and really look out for the community, and instead of talk about competition, you talk about collaboration, it can be such a cool thing. But it's lesser than it is more, I guess.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think I'm curious about, how do you sort of hold on to that and not get into, because I know that you're the kind of person that I think you and I are similar in this, that we're like we trust easily and sort of like see the best in people. But if you have somebody that is, you suddenly you feel like, oh my gosh, they're being super competitive and it doesn't feel good anymore, it doesn't feel collaborative. Like, how do you handle that kind of thing? Do you just like focus and stay in your own lane and not concern yourself with it? Or like, does it affect you?
Well, yeah, it absolutely affects me. But what it did, you know, it's funny, I just had a rush of like all these scenarios where like this has happened before, and now I'm trying to figure out the best one to, it's such a hilarious thing, like living in Los Angeles and growing up here for so long, you know?
Yeah.
What it does and what it did when I was a bit younger and a little bit less conditioned to what this could be, is it really did affect me, and it made me really hostile, and it made me really upset. And I started thinking, like, personally, like, I did not like this person. I don't like him. I won't work with him anymore. And what it has done since, and I'm glad that it's happened, is that it kind of just reinforces what I don't want to be. Rather than holding hostility, I just realized, like, you know, we're all built of different experiences, and that person just clearly doesn't get it, you know?
Right.
Or maybe, you know, he gets it in his own way, and things matter, or he holds value in other things more than you know, mm-hmm. but it reinforces who I want to be even more so. So when I see somebody that's really, I've had an experience where they really went behind my back. They took some clients. I won't even get into the details of it. I've done that before. But it really made it so I go, man, if I'm ever in that situation, I don't want to do that.
Right.
That's a really good blueprint for how I don't want to live my life. So it used to make me upset and angry. And I'm sure that in the moment it probably will and does or would again. But I like to take it as okay, that's them. That's who they are. Let's be a better me, I guess.
Sure. That's great. That's a great approach. And yeah, and ultimately, like, holding that anger or grudge like hurt, ends up hurting you more than, they're probably not even thinking about it. They're just trying to do their thing and trying to, you know, and it's like, I don't know, just there's always going to be people like that out there, you know, and it kind of says more about them than anything, you know, just like they're insecure and like almost just if you're able to sort of just send them some like compassion in a way for that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I said, it's just different people, different experiences. We're all built of, you know, who knows what happened to you earlier in that day that could have translated into how you now treat somebody later on in the day. It's just
It's
just different, and it really is I'm trying not to judge people on that, but really try to. The second you start focusing on somebody else, you know, you're losing. So.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess that's that. Monty, I didn't ask you, how are you doing today?
Oh, you're so sweet. I'm doing, as you said, today I'm doing pretty well again because I got to talk to you. I'm overly caffeinated because I had a lot of caffeine yesterday and couldn't sleep. So now I'm continuing the cycle of having a lot of caffeine.
Do you get a little anxiety when you have too much caffeine?
Yes. It's funny you said that. I was having so much anxiety last night and I was like, why do I feel this way? And then I was like, oh, bingo. Because I had like 3 cups of black tea, matcha. And I'm like, that's why.
So tea's your caffeinated choice. Do you drink coffee?
I can't drink coffee anymore because it really, it makes me super anxious. So,
okay.
But here I am with the tea. I'm, you know, overdoing it with the tea. So that, there we are, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's that saying, you know, different structure, different folks. I don't actually know. I know what it means, but I don't know where that comes from. So I hope it's not something like inappropriate or like rude.
No, I think, no, you know? that's definitely like a saying. Yeah. How about you? Do you get anxious with caffeine?
I get anxious all the time anyway. I started to realize that it's something that I'm trying to be more aware of is the anxiety. I don't know if caffeine, I mean, I think it's just like natural that caffeine will ignite some anxiety, I guess, or if you have anxiety, it'll further it.
Right.
I don't know. I think maybe it's what's that called? A placebo kind of where like you put something in your head. Now you're kind of thinking about it and aware of it. You're like WebMDing it, you know?
Yeah.
And so maybe I've been feeling it recently. I don't necessarily think that I feel better when I don't drink coffee though. So that's why I'm starting to think that's just in my head a little bit.
Right. Right. The one thing with coffee that I find as a benefit is it does make me like a slightly happier. When I have coffee, you know, I don't know if it's part of the same thing that makes me anxious, but it kind of like, you know, puts a little extra pep in your step.
Yeah. You know, there's something about it. I like the culture that coffee creates. I like so many things around coffee that, you know, it's not necessarily even for me about the drink. It's about seeing the baristas and that little interaction with whoever's in line and it's everybody starting their day. It's like some kind of beautiful, you know, I don't know the word for it. I wish I did. Personification or analogy for like things getting started. So many people rely on it to be productive. And what a cool thing that something like coffee, you know, can ignite that in people in a culture. So when you're in this coffee shop and you're you're around all these people, they're all there for a purpose, and it's to like start to be productive, which is kind of cool. So I kind of have this romanticized view of coffee. I didn't drink it until I was, you know, 23 or 4. So I didn't drink it for a long time. And now I have this like different perspective on it. And I really like the culture. I also like the taste. You know, it's so good. Mm-hmm, but
I wanted to circle back to something you said, because it made me think of earlier. You were talking about being an introvert, but loving people. And it made me think, I was talking to one of my good friends like 2 days ago about how we both were saying how we both really feel. I noticed this when I was, I'm totally an introvert, but people won't believe that because I, like you, you know, enjoy people and I appear extroverted, but man, I need to like recharge like crazy. But I was thinking about how when I'm talking to somebody that I don't feel like super connected to, how quickly my battery drains, like, you know, but if I'm like talking to somebody or working on a project that I am like obsessed with or really, really interested in, or like talking to you, someone who I just feel kinship with, like how I have all the energy in the world. And I'm just curious, like, do you feel that at all? Like, because my friend was saying, oh gosh, yeah, me too. And I just sort of realized that, like, how that's kind of the way that at least I function is sort of like, I have selective energy almost, you know, like it's like just for things that like really light me up. But I seem to not be able to even push through when it's something that doesn't light me up, you know?
I think that happens to everybody. I think it's well, maybe not everybody. I guess people that are a little bit more just not necessarily content, but it's going to sound bad, but like low maintenance. I've got friends that just don't care. They're good. They go with the flow. They're easy. You know, I feel like as artists or just, you know, different people, I draw inspiration from a lot of things all the time. And sometimes conversations aren't inspiring. Right. And not to say that they're not worth anything at that point, but it's like, it does drain. You're now making an effort to be in it rather than something that's so like symbiotic and, I hope I said that right. And just natural.
Yeah.
I think it's just part of that personality type that we draw inspiration from certain things and not from other things. And when you don't feel inspired, then that's when you put in the work. It's right. Not to say that we don't want to do that. But you make a choice at that point, what you invest into that conversation. But yes, that happens to me, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So interesting. I also was thinking about how the last time we were talking, wasn't that long ago, like what, a week or two ago, we're on the phone and I remember I asked you like how you were and we were talking about how, you know, it's so weird right now to ask people like kind of how are you when most of us aren't doing great, you know? And I think a lot about this, about how we often sort of put on like a sort of like a mask, you know, that's like, oh, we're doing okay when we're really not inside and there's so much more going on. But also that it's not always like safe to let that guard down with everybody. Like sometimes you have to just say like, oh, I'm fine and then move on. But like if you're with someone that you feel like connected to and safe with, it's a beautiful thing to be able to just be real. And going along with that thought, you know, you work with so many celebrities and people that look really beautiful and shiny on the outside all the time. But you have this unique position to, you're taking photos of them, which is a very vulnerable thing, right? On both ends and from you and for them. And, you know, because of the nature of that, you are seeing a more, kind of probably real side to them, you know? And I'm curious if spending so much time taking photographs of like well-known people who look happy and shiny all the time. Is there anything that you've learned from that, of like learned just generally about humanity through taking all these photos of these people?
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily get the realest version of who they are, because we're usually there for a purpose.
Right.
And some of these people, especially the celebrities, especially the actors, they're performers. They know how to turn it on. They know what they need to deliver. And it's kind of that saying, the show must go on. If they're not having a good day, sometimes they let you know it. But most of the time, you might not ever know. So we don't spend multiple days together. We don't spend even sometimes an entire day together. We spend sometimes minutes together. I mean, you've been on set with me before, where it's just such a quick interaction. So it'd be impossible to really get like a sense of how they were doing. I've been trying to be more intentional about having those conversations, especially recently. But what it made me realize is that people, you know, have bad days. And I've had bad experiences with certain people, or experiences that I wasn't excited about with certain people to photograph, or it, you know, during a photo shoot. I left feeling like, oh man, you know, they weren't actually like, they weren't cool, they weren't super nice, or,
right,
you know, we're just trying to create this cool photo and they weren't invested, they weren't interested, and, or, you know, they were kind of, you know, that person was kind of a dick, you know, but I started to really diagnose, because it started bothering me a little bit. But just like with those experiences where somebody has either like kind of stabbed me in the back a little bit, and or taken advantage of, you know, that weird energy kind of thing that LA has to offer that we were talking about a little bit earlier, like everybody has their own experiences. I have no idea what they did in that morning. So I feel like it gave me a real sense that every one of these celebrities, for the most part, are just normal people that have a job to do, and they get there and they could have had a really bad morning, but you may not ever know it. So if I had a weird experience with them, I don't like to, you know, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt now because of it.
Sure.
I additionally like to start to think about what I'm offering, you know, what I'm offering to them for the photo shoot. So sometimes they leave and I go, wow, they like, I didn't really like working with them, or, you know, it was, we just didn't connect or something. And then I start to realize, okay, like there's one actor specifically that I won't use by, you know, I won't use his name, but we just had a bad experience. And I left, you know, in the height of the emotions of this shoot. It wasn't like, the photos turned out fine and we didn't leave like hating each other or anything like that, but it just felt a little bit forced or off or weird. And I don't know how he felt about it. He probably didn't care, but I left, and those interactions really matter to me, but I left and I went, okay, let's take a step back. Let's calm down a little bit and think why. And because I've seen him in photo shoots before, prior, where he was invested and excited and eccentric and loud, and I thought, wow, those are really, really great photos. I cannot wait to photograph him, and I hope to have that connection. And we didn't. And I started doing some self-diagnosis of, okay, one, paired with the fact that maybe he had a bad day, maybe he was thrown off, maybe there was something that happened that was out of my control. But the things that were in my control, I don't know if I entertained him in our shoot. I don't know if it was unique enough that really triggered something that he was passionate about. I don't know if I provided something that he could then be his eccentric, artistic, loud self. Not to say, you know, I think it's a combination of a bunch of things, but it made it more so real for me in this like weird little tunnel view that people are so nuanced, and that I need to do everything that I can to set it up and have that conversation with whoever I'm photographing to say, okay, what are we trying to create here? That's my biggest thing now is, hey, we're just trying to capture your personality, whatever that mood is today. Let's talk about it. Let's collaborate. What do you want to do here? What do we want to say with this? And it sounds like a little straightforward or blunt, but it definitely is more honest, I feel. But it allows me to do something that respects their art and also leaves them a little bit of room to, like, you know, have a bad day if they want. They don't have to turn it on.
I love what you just shared. And I just noticed, what, you know, having the privilege of being on set with you a number of times, you really do have a way, an ability to put people at ease. And you have this quality of, because you're so genuine, you know, and I think people can feel that. And I think that really translates to the final photo too, because you're getting people like as they are. And you know what, there are always going to be some people that, like you said, are having a bad day, or for whatever reason, like the chemistry just isn't there, you know? And that's going to happen no matter who you are. But I guess, well, I have two part follow-up questions. One, like, how do you, just as a person, like if you're a sensitive person, how do you shake that off? Like, if you had that experience, like you described, just now with that person who was just like not in it, you know, like how do you, like after that, do you go home and feel really bummed and like eat some ice cream, or like how do you handle it?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of, I had the fortunate opportunity, that shoot took place in New York, and I had the fortunate opportunity to sit on a train for, you know, I didn't have to drive or anything. I just got to sit on a train for about 45 minutes to listen to my thoughts and think, okay, why did that bother me so much? And I think what I do to deal with it is, you know, everybody has those people they confide in, and I can either give them a call and vent a little bit and say, hey, I hate this. And then, you know, I'm lucky that my circle is somebody that goes, hey, like, let's think about this a little bit more, rather than just like, yeah, fuck them. I don't know if I can share.
Totally.
Sorry, if I just...
Oh, you can swear. Oh, yeah, people swear all the time.
All right, cool. Because I also swear all the time. But so really what I do now and for the past little while is I just go into, okay, if I didn't like something, I try to diagnose, why did I not like that? And what could have happened to make it better? And I think that I think it's the only way for me to not get caught up in the emotion, because I am sensitive to it and I do care so much. I care more than, you know, most of the time when I take these photos, I usually care more than the person I'm taking the photo of. They do this all the time. I also do this all the time, but I care about those moments. So when it's a less than amazing moment, or I feel like I maybe didn't provide like the most incredible experience or something, I care. And I want to diagnose so that if one, I ever work with that person again, I can, you know, we can work on it, which has happened. And it actually happened recently with an actress. The first time we did a photo shoot together, it was odd and it was a little off. And I think that there was other circumstances going on their behalf. I don't think that they necessarily walked into the room prepared and ready to do a photo shoot. But then the second time we kind of got to bond, not over that, but we got to look at the photo and I got to build it to be a little bit more curated to what I know that she would appreciate. And we built that interaction a little bit differently. So we got to really redeem it a little bit, which was so good. But it really is
about, that's great.
It really is about the diagnosis of like, okay, what went wrong? Why did it go wrong? And how do we prevent that going forward?
Yeah. Well, that's great, Josh. Thank you for sharing that. And I love what you said about being able to call friends who aren't just going to be like, oh, well, fuck them, you know, and like actually talk to you about it. That is so important to have friends like that, who you can just be real with and like really get in there and like, you know, talk about these things and talk through them and unpack them so you can feel like genuinely better afterwards.
Yeah. Or else you just end up having this resentment and it's like weirdly. Yeah. And sometimes, you know, for the first fiery moments, it's okay. It's okay. You can do that.
Sure.
And there's always people that you can like, you know, just talk shit with, but I don't think it's super healthy. And I don't think it's healthy with something that like you want longevity in.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, especially something so nuanced as people. And for me, yeah. Photography, you know, it's like I care more about this than to like just get so worked up every single time that I don't want to do it anymore. I want to do this forever. So it's,
yeah,
let's rein it in and, you know.
Josh, I never asked you this, but like, or maybe I have, and it's just been so long that I forgot. But when did you start, like, when was the first spark that you knew, like, this is what I want to do with photography? And how did you, are you self-taught? Did you just teach yourself how to do it all?
Yeah. So that's a bit of like a convoluted question. I didn't necessarily have formal like schooling teaching, but I could never say that I was self-taught. Self-driven would be the one. I liked photography in high school. I had a friend that did it, and we took this photo class in high school, and it was fun. And I think it was more of an excuse to like not go to class, but I liked it, and I felt like it was something that I really enjoyed. And it was the first time I'd opened my, you know, eyes to something not necessarily artistic, because I love music and all that, but you know, creating something that was unique in a perspective. And but then I you know, I got a D in that class, in that photo class, and I didn't really
that says everything. Grades don't mean anything.
Yeah, I really didn't pass that class. It was probably because I never showed up on time, and because I didn't put forth the right effort, and because I was a child. But it did spark something that I was like, I really like this. I thought this was cool. And then I went to school for journalism because I had this weird, you know, you graduate and you have this moment where society wants you to know what you want to do and be smart enough to figure it out and go do it and execute it and then not be in debt and all these things. So great in theory, but it's not, because we're kids and we don't know anything about anything, but we feel like, and we think that we do. So I graduated and I thought, okay, what do I love to do? I love music. I love playing music. I love writing and I love photography. None of those are very awesome financially. And so I thought, okay, which one could be the most stable? What can I get a career in? What can I get a job in? And so, and because, you know, at that age, and what public school teaches you is to graduate to get a job. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to go to school for journalism because I feel like I could get a, you know, a job at a magazine or maybe like a newspaper or something. I had no idea. Stupid kid.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that every one of those jobs and every job is almost as freelance as the next. You know, it's about the effort that you put in. It's about the experiences and the opportunities that you get in certain things. You can make anything work and they're all going to be difficult. You know, there are safer and easier ways to go about it. But especially in those fields, it was like, okay, I could have. And what they don't teach you, what a lot of people don't teach you, not you, what society doesn't teach, you know, youth, is that there's a million jobs around all of these main passions. You may not be the rock star, but you can, you know, tune the guitar. You can, you know, master his record. You can produce. You can do a million things. Think of what goes into a live show and how many hands there are there. You know, you can in photography, you don't necessarily need to be the photographer. You can be an assistant. You can be a set designer. You can be a prop stylist. You can be a million things on that set. That's not the photographer.
And still do the photography, but you can pay your bills by doing something that's connected to it. You
and
know,
they teach you like, okay, if you're not going to be the actor, then you can't. Then you fail. You know, it's like, no, I can work on my passion. If I want to be an actor, I work on that passion, but I can also, you know, do something in the behind the scenes. I can be in the writer's room. You know, you can do things that are connected. Maybe not everybody's destined to be the photographer. Maybe you don't interact with people in the right way, or, you know, the eye, or you don't have the hustle for it or something like that. I don't know, but not everybody's meant to be a photographer. But if you really love photography, you can always do that and still work in the photo field. If you're passionate about it, there's so many jobs around it. You don't need to be, you know, but That being said, I thought very flat, okay, which one can make a career? And so I thought, for some reason, I convinced myself that journalism was going to be the thing. And so I went to school at the University of Hawaii for journalism. I hated it. I realized that it was not viable. You know, it was viable as much as anything else. So if I'm not going to like this, I might as well, you know, I might as well just do something that I really love. So I left and I took this like little class at a community college. I was dating a girl and she was super into photography or getting into it. And I said, hey, you should take this class with me. And I was like, I don't know. She goes, I know that you like photography. You should do it. So she convinced me, you know, she didn't have to convince me very hard, but I took this class and a really awesome photographer. You have, I believe, met him before.
I have?
I think you have. Joseph Giannis.
Yeah, the name rings a bell.
Yeah, I think that you've met him before. I'm not exactly sure, but he came into the, you know, that photo class and did a guest lecture series, and he brought his book full of musicians and celebrities. He shoots for Rolling Stone and, you know, Billboard and all these insane things that I just never really realized were artistic magazines at the time. And he brought in this entire book and was like, hey, you know, this is possible. This is what a career could look like at this stage. And if anybody wants to intern for me or is looking for an internship, send me an email. So I did. I sent him an email, and I don't think anybody else in that class sent him an email. Yeah. So he invited me for an interview, to his studio. It was like on a Tuesday, let's say at like 11 a.m. in Glendale. I knew nothing about the photo industry. I knew nothing about the entertainment industry other than what you see at like red carpets and this like posh, like everybody's in this beautiful suit and everybody's dressed up and, you know, whatever. So I went to the fashion district, Santee Alley, and I bought this insanely, what I thought was a really nice suit at the time. Like a straight up like a three-piece suit. Oh my gosh, it's embarrassing, honestly. But I didn't know. I just wanted to impress this guy, you know. I wanted to impress this like Hollywood celebrity photographer. So when I bought this suit, I show up for the interview. It's at 11 a.m. I'm driving around. I'm looking for his studio. I'm expecting this like nice, crazy space. And I drive up and I park, and the address is a duplex. It's like a top unit in an apartment. And I went, this has to be wrong. Like, this can't be right. And so I knock on the door, and there he is. He opens the door in his pajamas at 11 a.m. And I was like, what? And he laughs. He laughs at me because I'm wearing a fucking three-piece suit to this interview.
Oh my goodness.
You know, he didn't have a shoot that day. I'm not saying that they were pajamas. They were lounging clothes, I guess.
You're right. Okay.
And I thought, what the fuck is this? This guy just showed me, you know, photos of Jeff Bridges. He showed me photos of Lenny Kravitz that he took, like these huge, entire, crazy sets. And I was like, what? This can't be right. And it was right, and it was so good. And I'm so happy when he laughed and he said that I got the internship immediately because I was wearing that dumb suit, and he thought it was really fun.
Because you cared.
It was really fun. So, but I do think it's because it shows like a little bit of care. But So that was the start. And I will say that I knew, you know, I had a couple professors in really the photographers at the community college that kind of started things off. And then they taught me some stuff that I needed to know. But it was in a very college, you know, community college view. And then Joseph took me under his wing and said, hey, like, I didn't know if I was going to go back. Now I have this new passion. I thought maybe I wanted to go to art school or something. And he just looked at me. He's like, hey, man, like, if I can give you one piece of advice, like, and my mom hated this because she wanted me to go to school. She wanted it. She wanted me to go back to school. He said, don't go to school. I will take you under my wing. I will teach you what you need to know. I will, any questions, you're going to get on set real experience from a, you know, a photography career here. Don't go to school. Stay here. And I was like, okay. So he convinced me. And he, so when I say that, like, I can't say that I was self-taught. He taught me a ton of stuff. And the assistant that he had brought on had taught me a ton of stuff. I met one of my best friends, Corey Nichols, who's an incredible photographer as well. And he taught me a bunch of stuff. And it was like a development from there. So though I didn't have any formal teaching, it was experiential teaching on set. I was learning. And I was a sponge. All I wanted to do was learn and talk and ask questions. And Corey probably got annoyed at me at times because I was constantly like, what do you think this lighting is? And what is this? And how did they get this? And this is so cool. And I want to shoot like this or whatever. I was like, Corey described me at that time. I think I was 19 or 20 as a puppy. As like a little puppy was excited about everything. And I was. I still am.
That's how you learn.
And so I stopped that. It was an internship for a little while. And it was so cool because not only was it an internship, he was so generous. And he hired me on as an assistant, was paying me some money here and there. And I had never seen like money in this industry, you know? So it was cool to like be able to, you know, pay bills or like not have to like, you know, it was just a good situation. I'm really thankful for it. And it was a learning situation. He was really patient because I know that there's times where I stepped on his toes. And, but he was really gracious with that. And I don't know if it was out of lack of confrontation or just he knew that I was learning. I don't know. But either way, I respected and I appreciated it a ton. So then I left. I went to Boston for a little while. I shot a ton in Boston with a lot of up-and-coming artists at, you know, your favorite Berklee College of Music.
Yeah.
And I shot a lot of dancers at Boston Conservatory and, you know, anybody that was working on their MIT project, you know. There was a ton of stuff and ample opportunity to create imagery and make a little bit of money here and there. When that felt like I needed another step up, I came back to Los Angeles and I picked up an internship, which is this crazy other story on how this happened with an incredible photographer named Art Streiber. Art Streiber is at the top of the game. He's an incredible celebrity and advertising photographer. You know, I'm sure people know his work, but if you don't, check out him, check out Joseph, check out Corey. And he then took it to like, okay, Joseph was, I think, 30, maybe 32, 33 at the time. And I thought that this is the most insane photography business ever. He's made it. He's great. He's awesome. What I didn't realize, almost, you know, I'm about 28 now. I didn't realize that like at 32, shit is not going to be completely figured out. You know, like this is, I'm 20 years old, 19, 20 years old. And I think like, this guy's made it, you know, in 12 years, woo, like we're going to be there, you know? I didn't realize he was still figuring it out and still building his career and his thing. Well, then and not to say it's just where he was at that point. And then I get to this internship with Art, and I realize, oh shit, this is what a photography career could be. And it really can sustain, and it really can be like a full career. It's going to be difficult, but this could be huge. I was on some of these sets for, you know, NBC Universal movie campaigns and stuff. And I was like, this is insane. This is crazy. I thought I knew it all already. And so then he built this network of assistants that taught me a ton of stuff. So it's just been a lot of, this is a long answer to a very, you
know, it's amazing. No, I'm so grateful.
But
to
he,
hear.
So his network of assistants and digital techs and producers are so generous and so kind. And I think they're really a byproduct of the energy that he puts out and the personality that he has that he kind of ignites that in other people. And they've all been really generous with information and knowledge as well. So that's kind of where it came from, where the start came from. Other than that, it's a couple people taking chances here and there when they didn't have to. Craig Edwards over at like Deadline and Penske Media. He hired me for some celebrity stuff. Worked with, you know, obviously how we met. Joseph years ago put me up for this job with, you know, Spins, Mike Spinella, at Pandora. We did this shoot for, I don't know if you were there. You might have been. We did it in San Diego for the band Little Hurricane. It was one of their Pandora sessions, and you know,
no, I don't think
it snowballed into other opportunities and things that built up. So, you know, you start shooting like little musicians for a brand that's on, you know, the up, you know, I don't know the word that I'm trying to use for there, but they're this rising brand, and it develops into other things. Little Hurricane turned into Andy Grammer. Andy Grammer turned into, you know, one of our festivals that we did, and you know, that's Odessa, that's Brandon Urie, that's Halsey, that's all these people that some of them I don't even know at the time. Lizzo, we photographed that year as well.
Yeah, like, totally.
You know, and it just is the catalyst for other things. That turned into, you know, iHeartRadio, this thing with iHeartRadio, which is a suggestion from Joseph, and it was Ryan Seacrest, and that was like the transition into a little bit of entertainment. Now I had Ryan Seacrest on the book. I could push him for other things. So it's been a buildup of self-drive and wanting to be a sponge, and the generosity of some really key people that I, you know, forever am thankful for.
What an amazing story. And like you said, it's not self-taught, it's self-driven. And I love that. It's like you made things happen. And because you put yourself in the way of that, things came to you, you know? It's a bit of like it's not just luck. It's really being, you know, able to advocate for yourself and saying yes to things to get you to that point.
Yeah, it's like right place, right time. But you also have to like put yourself in that. Like you got to drive. You have to drive to that place. You have to be willing. If you sit on the couch, you know, it's probably never going to be the right place.
Exactly.
But I do, you know, that's what I say. Like I used to just give all the credit to, you know, just Joseph, Corey, and Art. You know, they taught me everything. It's really like really just all off the generosity of them. And a huge part of it is, and I'm not dwindling that down at all, but I think that it was doing a disservice to people that were really curious on how to get into it themselves, because now they have all these resources of people that they ask, but for some reason they're not succeeding, or for some reason it's not taking off. And the reality is that like there's a huge key factor in it that I was out of humility and, you know, trying to be humble was not bringing up, but it was doing a disservice that you have to put in your own work hard. Like you have to put yourself in those scenarios. You have to initiate those conversations. You have to be persistent. And the other things, you know, are the help from it, but like you have to be the one to do it first.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. What a great story, Josh. Thank you for sharing that. It's really inspiring. And man, I just was thinking about when you and I think we first met at in Gulf Shores, Alabama, at that music festival.
I honestly missed that festival so much.
Me too.
Every time that it comes around, you know, for a couple years afterwards. So, were you there the first year of the with the trailer, with the Gulfstream trailer?
Yes. I was there the first.
That was the first year. Yeah. I mean, one of the best experiences just of life. You know, we had
I totally agree. It was a dream. It was a dream.
That was pre Hangout Fest being bought by Golden Voice. That was pre Pandora being partnered or purchased. I don't know what the situation is by Sirius. You know, it was like this wild west of like, we were the only people there creating content.
Yes, because it was just the Pandora trailer and then all the artist trailers. It was like you, me, and Ben, I think, at that time, the first time. And oh my gosh, I mean, that was, and there was this freaking swing in the ocean. Like, we had our private beach. It was ridiculous.
I think about it all the time. I go, how did we get so lucky there? And not only that, like, the craziest thing is that, okay, so like, I was at Coachella maybe like,
you know, a month before. I think that's like Gulf Shores Hangout Fest, Alabama was the end of that like summer festival tour, right? You have like Lollapalooza and you have Bottle Rock and you have Coachella and you know, you have all those things, right? But that capped it off. It was crazy because Coachella I was there and we were shooting for that too. And it was so convoluted. It was so packed. It was so crazy it was so competitive to try to get any time with any of these people. And then we're sitting on this beach in the artist area with no other media sources, not another photographer in the entire place. Yeah. And we're just like, everybody's excited because it's almost done. And we're just hanging out on the beach and they're super willing to do any shots and photos. And, you know, we created that portrait of Vance Joy that he ended up using for a bunch of stuff. And we photographed Halsey that year, you know, we photographed all these people that like, I didn't know what it was going to be, but it was magic. It was that was a great experience.
It was amazing. I'll never forget it. You know, it's and especially the first year, because I mean, it was great every time, but the second year it got more like kind of gated, you know, like there was like, oh, like we didn't have the same access to the food and all that stuff. Do you remember that?
I do remember it being a little bit less, they were just buttoning up, you know?
Exactly. It was still magical, but that first year was out of this world. It was like, it was amazing.
The problem is we got spoiled with the first year. We
Exactly. So I still can't. I'll never forget it. And also, I have such fond memories with you of like being in. We would just be talking like late into the night. You remember like being in the car, just talking and listening to music and stuff. It was just so fun.
Yeah, it was a great dude. I loved. What a good time. I don't have any bad memories from that trip. I remember flying into Mobile, Alabama.
Yeah, exactly.
Flying into Mobile, Alabama and renting a car and just driving through. I'd never been to Alabama before. I know that it's not really like, you know, it's such a small view of what Alabama is and your state. Right. But it was so cool to just drive through this random place that I'd never been to end up at this like crazy, beautiful, like southern beach. And it was a mess. It was wild. It was new. It was really cool. I really loved that. And then the second year, I think I flew into New Orleans and drove from New Orleans. And that was an experience.
Oh, that's awesome. Good memories. Well, I want to ask you a couple more questions like that I normally ask everybody. Yeah, sure. But before I do that, I would be remiss to not ask you this question, which is because you were talking earlier about that experience with that actor, how like you couldn't really get something out of him, like, that you wanted, right? But can you share, because I know you have many stories like this too, the opposite of like when you were like really surprised by somebody being really vulnerable with you in front of your camera?
Yeah, let's think about that for a second. There's some people that just get it. You know, there's some people that you have a real conversation with. And I don't know if that's a fair statement, actually. There's some times where, you know, energy is contagious and, you know, attitudes are contagious. So who's to say they didn't leave that shoot, you know, that bad shoot and go, wow, that photographer was like not in the best mood. I don't know if I really like that, you know? And so as I bring my energy to the table as well. So there's times where I'll tell you my favorite experience photographing. I think anybody at this point, and just because of the direction it changed my intention, was Bill Hader. It was an interesting, really interesting shoot. We were doing it was publicity for his, it was an editorial, but it was in publicity for his show, Barry. Great show. Awesome. Hilarious. Funny. And he's such a funny actor. He's creative. He's great. And he's getting directing and all these things. But I'm like, man, that story has been told. And there's so many funny photos of this guy, like being a dork. And I had a friend that worked with him once and was like, yeah, I really wanted it to be like this hilarious thing. And he's a very conceptual, quirky photographer. And because I had these ideas, but it didn't seem like necessarily he was into props or he was into that idea. So he goes, if I have any suggestion for you, I would say probably don't bring props. And I was like, oh, interesting. I feel like comedians would like to work with props potentially. And I know this is a weird back way, you know, doesn't matter. So I thought, started thinking about, okay, I don't want to put him into the same box that everybody always puts him in. I don't want to put anybody into a box. And maybe I was feeling introspective. Maybe I wanted more out of photos or out of interactions with people. But I thought, okay, let's do a little research. I like to find little concepts in people's lives. I like to find little experiences that people have. And, you know, you take it with a grain of salt because who knows what's true on Wikipedia or what's true it said. But what started trending when I started researching more into Bill Hader and who he was, aside from the SNL, was that he, and it was popping up everywhere, that he has and suffers from like crippling anxiety. And I thought, wow, okay, I relate to that. It's not necessarily crippling, but it definitely affects me a lot.
Yeah.
And let's look into this and see like what the story is here. And really what it was he recently had came out and not recently, but within like the year had come out and, you know, been an advocate for meditation, you know, David Lynch has this whole thing on transcendental meditation, and Bill Hader started doing his practices, and in turn, like all these people that were Bill Hader fans, you know, he's got a huge fan base. We're coming out and going, like, thanking him for sharing his story on anxiety because they want to be an actor too, but they didn't think it was possible because they suffer from anxiety. And his story is that, like, even before he would go on Saturday Night Live, he'd be, you know, in his head, he'd be sweating, he'd be like doing all these things, he'd be anxious, right? So, yeah, this is something bigger. This is really cool. And this is very personal. And this is almost what I'm striving for. I want to tell people stories truthfully.
Yes.
So I showed up and I was in the studio. We were doing two shoots that day. It's funny because I'll get into that in a second. But we're doing two shoots that day, and I handed him a print. Bill Hader walks in. He's just in his normal outfit, and I go, "Bill, it's great to meet you. I noticed that you're a David Lynch fan. I work with David Lynch. And I had the opportunity to take his portrait a few times, and I made you this print. Here you go. If you like it, cool. You have it, you know, whatever, it's yours." And so he thought that was kind of cool. So it kind of started us off on a note, but this is what I'm saying, where I was like, okay, how do I make this an experience for him that he's going to appreciate, you know, making it curated special for these people, because we're trying to get honest interactions. It's gotta be special. And so he goes, "All right, so what's the game plan?" And I go, "Okay, we have a couple options. We're set up with this really beautiful, nice light. We can do the publicity thing where you're laughing, you're clapping, your hands are full in your pockets, or your arms are crossed or folded, and, you know, you're walking back and forth. We do like the loud energy, you know, publicity thing. You've done it a million times. We can do it again today. We're set for it." I said, "But..." And I lean more toward this one. "I wanted to pick your brain without exploiting it. I see that you're an advocate for anxiety, and I think that's really important. I think it's really cool. Can we visualize that? Can we give a visual representation of what that feels like?" And I said, "I don't want to put you in a box, because I know that you've already like beaten it or count. You know, you're coming out of feeling so anxious and you have your tools ready, but is there a way to show what that feels like without exploiting it?" And he like takes a breath and goes, hold on. Let me think." And I go, "It's up to you. I'm going to go in the studio right around the corner. You let me know what you think and we can do whatever you want. It's up to you." So I go, and about 10 minutes later, whatever hair and makeup they were doing, not much. He walks into the studio like 10, 15 minutes later with this like fire, like this antsy, like excited fire. He goes, you know what, Josh, I think I got it. Like, I think I know what I want to do because I like your idea, but I think I know what it looks like. And I was like, oh, cool. Like what? Like collaboration, excitement, something deeper, something bigger. Like he knows what he wants to do. Like, let's do this. I'm excited now. Like, yes, Bill, tell me your idea. And so he tells me, he goes, it's like everything goes out of focus and I'm like sitting in my own brain. Like it's right here in front of me. It's like everything fades away. I just feel anxious. And I go, oh, shoot. So what if we saw the set in the background and your eyes are there and everything else is out of focus? He goes, yeah. Ooh. And so Bill's also been doing photography, and I'm sure he does it a lot more now. But at the time, he was like, hey, like I'm trying to find my eye a little bit more. I'm directing more. So he was like, yeah. And so he threw out a couple of ideas. We landed on like this really shallow depth of field, and we wanted to create that. So to answer your question, he is the best experience I've had because it felt so honest, so collaborative. We did the shoot. It was heavy for about, I mean, we had like 45 minutes to shoot if we wanted to. And we shot for about 10 minutes.
Wow.
And it was, I'm like, I get goosebumps when I think about it because the feeling in the room was heavy. What he was doing, he's a phenomenal actor, but I felt like he was acting and being very honest. And
right,
it was kind of emotional, and there was other things that I wanted him to do, but I didn't want to really direct or take anything away. So when we got the shots that we did, I said, you know what, Bill, I think we're good. And he thanked me at the end. He goes, man, most of the time people make me do like really quirky, dorky stuff, and I get it that, you know, times call for different, you know, measures, but I appreciate you. And I was like, dude, no, I appreciate you. This is incredible. I had this fire because it felt honest and it felt so real. And I was excited, vulnerable. And when I look at the photo, you know, I like being surprised and letting the person, actor, musician, whoever, surprise me with who they are. I like to see a little bit of that. It's what makes it fun for me. As long as the light's right and everything's fine, then I get to be excited about the outcome because it's what they did. So when I look at that photo, I see what he feels, and I really like it. I would say that that's the one.
So beautiful, Josh. What strikes me too is how that was a real collaboration between two artists and two like just good humans, you know, and that you like listened to him tell you what anxiety felt like to him. And then you found this way to translate that onto the photo, you know, like how do we make this really feel like what the inside of you feels, you know?
I'm thankful and I feel lucky. And it also set me up for like, okay, like, well, that was the best experience I've ever fucking had. That was,
it's all downhill from here.
Like, okay. How do we conjure this for every shoot going forward? Say that I had a shoot, so that ended, we were like on this high, like, wow, we love that. That was great. Yeah, I'm gonna do some audio interview. Sorry, Bill. I got another shoot. I know it's weird, we don't usually do this back to back, but I gotta reset for this other shoot, this other cast, in about, you know, 30-40 minutes. So thank you so much. Go and like go have a good interview. Like, that was awesome. I appreciate you. He leaves. We re-rig for this next thing, and the next cast comes in, and it's like impossible to recreate the energy that I just had with Bill.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, shit! Like, it was such a good, like, oh man, I'm glad it happened how it did, because it gave me such a real, like, look on, you know, people are real for sure, and everybody's going to be different, and like I said, everybody's going to have a different experience, and maybe we didn't set it up. I tried to be really conceptual with that second shoot, and it was like a little bit, you know, publicist gets involved, and, you know, I love people, right, but I, you know, publicists suck. So I say that jokingly, but I also say that kind of not jokingly. They have a job to do, and most of the time they're not artists, and they don't understand that we are also artists.
Right.
So I don't necessarily hold it against them, but they do make our jobs like really, really difficult sometimes because they're just doing their jobs. So that being said, it didn't, it kind of like put a lot of hoops and barriers to jump through for that shoot. And it did not feel real. It did not feel. And I look at those photos back to back, the ones of Bill that I really, really, really care about. And then the ones of these next people that I look at, okay, they look good. They look fine. The light's clean. Like the energy feels, it feels good. And if you look at the photos, you'd probably be like, oh yeah, what a great time. And it's just like, you know, I don't feel connected to them because it felt, you know, fabricated a bit. So it just is the gambit.
Oh man, yeah.
The gambit.
Well, and it's like it's, yeah, exactly. It's gonna, it shows you what's possible though, you know, and you're like, oh, you experienced that and you know it can happen again. And it made me think when you were speaking about the publicist and all that, like I probably have shared this with you before, but like part of the reason I started this podcast is because when I was interviewing, you know, artist after artist in Nashville for during CMA Fest, especially country artists are very media trained, you know, and so the artists, like they know what they're quote unquote supposed to say to kind of have their answers, you know, set. But what broke the mold was this one day when I was interviewing artists and they were giving sort of a lot of the same answers, you know, because that was like what they were supposed to say. But then Wynonna Judd comes and completely, it just is raw and real and like just was so vulnerable and honest with me. And it, woof, I had that feeling that you were describing when you just, you know, you're seeing someone's who they are and they're like taking away all the layers and they're just showing you their authentic self, you know? And that's really what made me think, like, I just, as much as I possibly can, I only want to have those conversations, even if I'm doing an interview for professional reason, like I want to be always be like, try at least to make it possible for that person to feel like they can be real.
It's the realness is that we're all searching for. And I feel like in this time with social media being king, and we all see the facade of what things can be. I mean, people are renting out fucking private jets for 15 minutes to do dumb photo shoots and stuff. We know what's fake. We're,
right,
you know,
right,
hit in the face with a brick of fakeness every day. It's so beautiful to have real conversation, real experience, especially when you're creating, you know, as an interviewer and a writer and a poet, I'm referring to you. You're an artist, and so as an artist you want that realness in any conversation or anything that you create with any of your subjects, with any of your people. So the fact that you had that beautiful conversation and it felt real was it's fulfilling. It hits a part of what, like I said all the time, I love people when they act like people, you know. It's that sense of community, it's a sense of realness that we strive for all the time. But obviously, it makes sense that it feels so good, you know, when it happens.
Yeah, of course, because they're just connecting to someone's humanity and the truest parts of ourselves, which I think we're all so much more alike than we are different, you know. But we don't know that or see that because everyone's just trying to show their shiny best self all the time, you know.
Yeah, I totally, totally understand that, and I get it. You know, I get trying to, you know, show. You're put yourself in the best light, and there's always, you know, there's times and places, and I'm not going to walk into the, you know, I talk about the culture of a coffee shop all the time. I'm not going to walk into the coffee shop in the morning and they're going, hey, how you doing? I'm not going to be like, man, depressed, you know, I'm depressed.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's time and
totally
place to be
time and place
as real and fun, you know, and as publicists and as, you referenced, you know, country artists being media trained, all these things. Like, there's times where it's necessary for that because you just need to get a message out there, and there's business and there's all this stuff. But I appreciate realness. I know that you appreciate realness. I know that a lot of people appreciate realness.
Yes. And I'm just thinking now, I hadn't really stopped to think about this before, but that's what maybe made it so special to be, you know, when you and I, sometimes would be oftentimes during that time in Gulf Shores, Alabama, would be the only two people in that trailer with the artists, me interviewing them and then you taking their photo. And how cool, like that energy was so was so wonderful, you know, just having like you there and having like kind of our mission is the same, you know, we had the same sort of just, you know, trying to capture the artist as themselves.
In that moment. It's so funny. It sounds like I hate publicists because I do. is we didn't have publicists in that trailer with us, right?
Right.
Rebecca. And it was kind of like a junket of sorts. We were creating a lot of like editorial content during the Tribeca Film Festival. And it was the same thing. We shot in this hotel, but the only way to get to where we were shooting, you had to go through this really little hallway and there was a ton of people. So it was like, hey, for the sake of like, we just air quote safety and, you know, streamline, like everybody else has to stay out here. We're going to do the photos in here. And it was incredible. Same with that little tiny airstream that got fucking scorching hot.
Oh my gosh, we're all sweating.
It was great because it was like, okay, now let's be real because, you know, your publicist isn't here. Like, let's just, like, you know, we're not going to ask.
Right.
The thing is, I'm not trying to set you up for failure at any point. And I think that, unfortunately, some people, they're not quite as moral about it. I think that there's a lot of news things and stuff and people that will capitalize on when you slip up, and it's unfortunate for sure. But that's the one thing that I'm trying to convince people of right off the bat, is that I am here to create something amazing with you, not use you to create something that I could use against you, that I could use for you, that, you know, I just want you to know that you're valued. And I think that's what we were doing. And that's the space that we were creating in that little Airstream Gulf Shores trailer and any other like little thing. Even with the publicist gone, we don't necessarily need you to drop your guard. We just need you to open up and be real, because we're not trying to take advantage of any sound bites or
anything
like
that. That's right. And to feel safe to be able to just, you know, be as much as themselves as they can be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, that's the goal.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. Okay, Josh, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that I typically ask in this podcast, okay. Which is, all right. So we talked a bit about anxiety, which you and I are have that kinship of anxiety, like a lot of people do, but you know, it's tough. But anyway, so having anxiety, and I want to ask, like, when you're feeling, let's say, either anxious or just going through some deep sadness, which I think so many of us have been, especially this year, what are like some of your tools that you pull on to help you to move through it?
It's a good question. And I've been thinking about that a lot and trying to, you know, gather better tools for it. I don't know, to be honest. Productivity, I realize, and I don't know what a friend of mine said it best, it's like post-creative depression. I don't know if it's like an actual, you know, it made sense to me that like we go through these bouts where like we have so many like things firing and you have these conversations and you know, emails and creative like ideas, and you're throwing around all these things and you get this chance to like create, and it's so great for a time, and then all of a sudden the job ends and you may not have another one for another month. So in that meantime, it's either you pick yourself up and find something else to do, or let that sink in a little bit, that like okay, there's nothing going on, and now we went from these super super creative highs to these post creative like lows, and I don't know exactly. I wish I had like a really great tool for you, but I'm still trying to figure that out. I think it.
No, that's really honest, Josh. That's go ahead. Sorry.
I think it just succumbed. I think I succumbed to it like a little bit more than I definitely want to. I kind of put out this like little call earlier this year for therapist recommendations.
It
was a weird time because it was COVID and everybody really wanted to do like, everybody was going through like that kind of some form of depression and, you know, separation, anxiety, and all these things. I unfortunately like have not sought out that, that help yet, but that's my step. That's a step that I want to take where, you know, you're just gathering those tools. So right now I don't have any tools for anybody to do that. I mean, I would say like keep yourself busy, but I feel like that's like a distraction tool. There's a lot of things that I do that like I don't think it's necessarily healthy to distract. But yeah, I'm gathering the tools. I don't really have a good solution for anybody yet. I guess that's all that being said, community, friends, reaching out, talking to people and letting people know where you're at, because everybody else is in the same fucking boat. You know, we all feel the same thing. Just some people talk about it and some people don't. So I put out that call for therapists and I got like 90 responses saying, hey, either like recommendations or, hey, like, good luck. We're here for you if you want to talk. Hey, like, I've been looking for therapists as well. I just wasn't going to put it out there. If you find your, you know, if you get people that give you recommendations, can you send them over my way? And it's like, oh shit, like everybody feels the same way. So,
totally.
I don't have the tools, but I think that community is a big one. And, but even then sometimes, you know, you succumb to it and you just sit there and you go, I don't even want to fucking, I know that community helps. I know that exercise helps. I don't want to do that. I just want to sit and listen to sad music.
Yeah. And let yourself move through it, you know? Yeah. It sounds like community and also creativity is, because what you're saying is, it's that thing that you were saying that your friend told you about, post creativity. That is a real thing. I know it for myself, because you get on such a high when you're creating, you know, and you're like in that flow, that when you come off of that, it's like inevitable that you're going to feel low, you know? At least maybe I'm the only one, but that's definitely
for me. No, you're not the only one. It's exactly what I'm talking about. It's like, I know.
Yeah.
And that's something I've been thankful for in the past couple of years, is like that realization of, okay, like a few years ago, I probably didn't realize that. And I didn't have an explanation for my friends or family when I stopped, you know, being myself as much in certain times.
Right.
I would disconnect a little bit. I wouldn't be able to talk too much. I wouldn't respond to text messages or anything. And I said that my inflection on text messages in that last like little thing was so weird. I said that.
I didn't even notice that.
So weird. But I didn't have a reason for it. I didn't have anything to tell people. I can make, because I wasn't aware of it. But now being able to be aware of it, like I can at least warn or say, hey, like set the precedent. Like, hey, like I just had this big thing. I'm pretty sure. I know that I'm like really heightened right now. I'm really excited. I'm loving this. But I have a feeling like it's going to come with an inevitable low. Like just patient or you know. I'll let you know if I don't, but I feel like I might go low after this. So,
yeah,
it's been an interesting thing, but it definitely happens. And it obviously, I know that I'm not the only one, especially now that you're saying that my friend said it.
So maybe it's just you and I.
Artist.
And the other friend. No, I think it happens to everybody that's an artist. I do.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing all that, Josh. Can you think of a time in your life when something that you really wanted didn't work out and then something better came in its place?
A time in my life where something I really wanted but something better came in its place. Yeah, of course. I mean, it's funny to like, as you get, I mean, like I said, I'm only 28, but as you get older and you start, I stop wanting to reference, you know, my childhood as much, but it really is a good example of like, okay, so I grew up playing sports like crazy. And I really thought that was going to be the path. Like I loved it. I was dedicated. It's all I did from like my entire growing up until like, you know, late in high school. And I thought like I was going D1, I was doing all these things, you know, I really, really thought these things, and worked for them. And I suffered a really bad neck injury. And it took me out of that. And so what I really, really wanted was to play sports. And what I really couldn't do anymore was play sports. And what it did was lead me into more of my artistic side and allowed me to become a photographer. So that's like that's a good like little diagnosis of like, you know, in retrospect or looking back, I see that as that I'm trying to think of a better, like more like recent example, but I feel like that's just the best one.
That's a big one. No, that's a really good one. Cause I mean, that probably was devastating to you in the moment, you know, and, but then look at you now.
Yeah. And I think it's devastating for all, like, you know, at the time, like children or youth, to like be told that the thing that you love the most, you can't do or whatever. It's
yeah.
Like a cliche movie plot, but it is true. You know, it's based on real things, but I'm trying to think if there's something more like recent that like I can think of that's like a little bit more, not quite as like youthful. There's been jobs where I, more of like a general sense, and this happens a lot, is where I really, really want this. I'm bidding for this job and I really want it. And like, you know, I'm all in with trying to like, you know, get this particular job and it doesn't go through and I go, fuck, like that sucks. Cause you work really hard to try to get that and to prove it. And you have a lot of conversations, but in turn, and this has happened a lot, is that like, okay, I didn't get that job and those dates would have been booked if I did. And something else came up that I would have had to say no to that I also really wanted to do, that I met the right person.
Ooh,
yeah. So it was like, it's kind of like that, like, I don't even want to say it. It really is an opportunity that goes away and that you feel like, oh, shit, like, I missed it. Dang it. But really what it did is, like, it kind of freed up your schedule for something else. I don't
get
that saying, like, you know, everything happens for a reason. But it's, like, it's simpler than that for me. It's everything happens as it happens and as it's going.
Right.
So, like, that didn't happen, but like, what am I going to do now? Sit there and wallow that I didn't do it? Or am I going to be open to the idea that something else could come up?
I love that. And sort of build this muscle once you have those situations enough that you realize when something does fall through that you really wanted, that you like can look at it and be like, okay, that's a bummer, but there's something else that's going to happen, you know, that's going to make me even more excited. Cause inevitably that is what happens, I find.
Yeah. I mean, it's just try not to succumb to the doubts when it does happen. It's going to happen. That shit is going to happen constantly.
Yeah.
But it's a long, you know, hopefully, you know, it's going to be a long time living and a lot of experiences. So I got to learn to deal with them now and figure out a better positive light to accept those missed opportunities as actually like, oh, well, it's just allowing me to do something different.
Totally, totally. Can you think of an act of kindness that you received in your life that really had an impact on you?
An act of kindness, yeah. I'll tell you one that when I lived in Hawaii, it doesn't have anything to do with the arts, but it did have a lot to do with humanity, and I thought it was really, I don't know. When I was going to school at University of Hawaii, I worked at the Cheesecake Factory. And right next to the Cheesecake Factory in Waikiki was, you know, there's a lot of homeless people that live out there. A lot of them, a lot by choice, a lot by circumstance. It's just you get the whole entire gambit. And there was a guy that I walked by all the time getting to work. And he just looked like he was really, really down on his luck. You know, he was sitting there kind of, you know, obviously, you know, he's homeless, so he doesn't have like access to the showers and things that like most people, the mental health probably wasn't quite there. And I'd walk by this guy all the time and he never really asked for money. Definitely not like, especially like, I don't know. He just never really asked for much, but you could tell that he was in need. And so one day I left and I was on my break and I walked over to the guy and I said, hey, there's a McDonald's right down the street. I'm going to go buy you some food if you're hungry. Are you hungry? And he's like, oh, that would be amazing, man. Like, I was like, okay, what do you want? He goes, whatever's cheapest, you know, dollar menu, whatever. And I said, no, man. Like, at this point, like, just tell me, like, whatever you want. I don't care what it's going to cost. Just let me know. I would love to buy you whatever you want from McDonald's. It's going to be nothing. You know, it's the least I could do. And he goes, oh, amazing, dude. Well, thank you. how about this? And he gives me this order, and it's like a couple sandwiches. It's nothing. I'm so modest with this order. And so I go to McDonald's, and I buy like 10 times the amount of shit that he I felt really compelled. For some reason, I felt really compelled. And I bought what he asked for, and I bought a bunch of extra stuff and was like, well, hopefully this, you know, hopefully he's not hungry tonight. And so I go
right.
and I give him this big bag of food, and he looks at me and goes, what is this? I said, well, yours is in there, but like, I didn't know like if you wanted more or if you're actually hungry, or you're just being like a little bit modest. So there you go. He's like, oh, wow. Like, he was so thankful. He was so thankful. He took a bite of food, and you could tell that that guy was hungry. Before he took food, he got up and walked to a bunch of other homeless people that were probably his friends or that he knows, that I had also seen, you know, throughout my time out there, and started handing out food to them before he even took a bite. And dude, I get goosebumps thinking about it. I get like emotional thinking about it. Just, I don't know if I'm romanticizing the situation or not or whatever, but the fact that this guy was hungry, you could tell that he was hungry, and before taking care of him, somebody in need went with what little, you know, was just given to him. He could just
so beautiful
get a disease. Instead, he went and fed other people, and I was like, fuck! This guy knows what's up. This guy has it figured out.
Oh my goodness. Well, there it goes again with the trick. Your kindness to him trickled. He, and that in turn was kind to others, you know? It was like this passing of the baton. That's so beautiful.
I felt like, you know, there's always like these stories about people giving, like, you know, the millionaire that gives like 10 bucks versus the guy who has $100 to his name giving $10.
Yeah.
You know, both are acts of giving, like all these things, but like that would hit me hard. I was like, wow, that is, it was wild. And, you know, I think I was 19 at the time, and I don't know if I had experienced, obviously I experienced a lot of kindness growing up, but I don't know if I'd experienced it like something that was like a direct interaction with me and this person. Like all of a sudden I was just, yeah, it took me, it was really beautiful. I really loved it.
Thank you for sharing that. I love how it's really stayed with you, you know? That's beautiful.
I don't know if that one will ever go away.
Yeah. Oh, well, love that. So why don't I ask you a couple of your, like a round of favorite things. Can you think of one of your favorite books?
One of my favorite books, yeah. So these are going to be like, it's always hard to say your favorite thing, right? Because it's mood dependent. It's well, maybe not for everybody, but for me, I'm very like I'm crazy, Monty. So
you're not crazy.
I would say my favorite book is The Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. I think that he has opening people's minds to certain ideas and thoughts that maybe weren't there before. That's a good book. It's really cool. It's really interesting. I love nonfiction kind of psychology, sociology books. I don't listen, or I don't
read
a lot of fiction books.
Do you read like creative nonfiction, or just straight like do you like to read like memoirs and stuff, or do you like to just read like kind of more fact-based fiction?
It's a lot of fact-based fiction, and I can't even do it audiobooks because I cannot, when there's data being thrown at me, I need to reread it like times. My retention is not phenomenal, so I need to reread it. I annotate the books a lot, and it's more of a project for me. And if I'm choosing to do it, like it's better. I hated it in school. I fucking hated it in school.
And then you love it now.
But, yeah, because I'm choosing the things that I like to now.
Yes, of course. Like of course.
So I will say that my favorite book is The Outliers. That's a great book. All of his books are great, but I'll leave that one at that.
Great. And we can change the word favorite to like meaningful, because you're right. Favorite feels so intense. It's like, dun, 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 what's your, you know? So okay. It's a meaningful thing. So what's a meaningful album or song?
This one's so tough because there's a million. I would say my favorite album, I always refer to my favorite album being Nevermind by Nirvana. I think it is, every song on there is perfect. The transitions are perfect. It hits hard. It's so good. Kurt Cobain is a troubled soul that I think a lot of people can relate to now, and you can't even relate to him because he's not here with us. And it's like, I don't know. There's a huge thing with the 27 Club that I get emotional about. And he's part of it. And that album just was something, I don't know. That album is insanely great. I really, really, really love that album. I'll say also, I don't know if it's morbid to say or weird, but I have a deep appreciation and respect for, what's the word when somebody passes away? Post?
It starts with an M.
You know, the work that an artist, the work that an artist puts out after they pass away, you know?
They didn't.
Mortem?
Yes. I believe that.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, you and I don't know, or something like that. We get the point.
Yes. I love the work that, so it's, even though he was alive, I'm listening to Nevermind in the time span now that Kurt is not there. And I listened to a huge album that's hitting me really hard recently, is Circles by Mac Miller. I think it's, I have a connection to people that are, you know, suffer from some depression, some anxiety, some artistic, like, you know, craziness. And I feel really sad that they're not here, but I feel really appreciative of their work. So that's a big one right now, is Circles by Mac Miller. Another album that has meant a lot to me, throughout my entire life is, not my entire life, I guess, but like, you know, whatever, since it came out, but Bring Me Your Love by City and Color. Really
so beautiful.
Little Neon Limelight. Were you at that show for Houndmouth? I feel like you might have been, but it's an incredible album. This is a long answer. And then you have like more fun ones. Those are all emotional, like fun. They hit a good spot. But then you have like, you know, Future Sex Love Sounds by JT. Or like the 2020 experience, that just like every song just hits and it's so good. And, you know, you got freaking Enema of the State, Blink-182. There's just a million albums. It's so hard to say, but those are all.
Well, you love, you're such a music lover. And I also remember being in that, remember when we were in the car, your car, and I think it was in, definitely was in Alabama, when you were like introducing me to Run River North.
What an incredible journey.
You were like oh, this is so beautiful, and then you played it for me and I was like, oh my gosh, so good.
Yeah, we ended up doing a whiteboard session with them, and man,
yes
shout out Run River North. Their band has changed a lot over the past little bit, and the just the dynamic and the members and stuff, and everybody's grown and changed from that, but what an incredible experience to be able to work with somebody that I wish, you know, that story would take so long to tell, but it's a beautiful one of just perseverance and knowing who you want to work with and when and why and what you want to do, and really like going after your dreams. It does, you know, the persistence pays off. Yeah. Shout out Run River North.
Yes. And what about a meaningful place to you?
A meaningful place. I feel like as a photographer, I do a lot of travel work, and I get this opportunity to see places through a lens, and cultures through a lens, and compositions and colors and action. It's very interesting to like really look at a place when you're there. I mean, New York is just an incredibly meaningful place to watch people and see people interact. Any Chinatown in any city is going to be an incredible, favorite, meaningful place. I've had an incredible experience in Oaxaca with people down there. I've had the hospitality of, you know, North Africa and Morocco. Like, I don't know. It's hard to say, but, you know, I will say that, like, vibrant, beautiful, meaningful places to me are full of culture. So let's say any Chinatown in San Francisco, Los Angeles, New York, you know, I like Chinatown. How about that?
I love that. That's a great answer. Okay, last one. How about a meaningful memory?
Oh, there's so many good meaningful memories. I like that you changed it from favorite to meaningful. It made it a lot
good.
I know. Because, you know, favorite memory would have been like, oh,
I know. Gosh. I know. It's kind of intense.
meaningful memory. I have this nostalgic feeling. It's not even a memory. You know, it's always weird to think about what's true memories and what's like.
Yes, yes.
What stories have been told and, you know, changed. But, you know, I get this feeling and it's so dorky, but I hear the song All the Small Things by Blink-182. And when I hear that, I have this memory of being outside of my childhood home and the weather is just like this like perfect sunny thing. I remember like looking out the window. I remember hearing the song, not for the first time, but like hearing the song and remembering the feeling of what that felt like. And I'll say that it's just one that is constantly reoccurring.
Oh, it's so good. Josh, I'm so happy we finally did this. You're just the best and I'm so grateful for you.
Monty, thank you for being persistent because I just, oh, it's a habit and a trait that I'm working on, but I really appreciate you and what you're doing. I think that this is a cool spot for people to be able to talk. You have some really incredible questions. It's weird to, because we've had so many conversations where I get to ask you all these questions as well. And it's weird to have it be like this one-sided thing because the conversation.
It's about you. No, no, no.
Conversations, you know, that go back and forth. But it's cool. And I really liked it. It was really awesome. Thank you so much for, again, being persistent and one, even like doing all this. This is so cool.
Oh man. No, thank you, Josh. And yeah, I'm sending you a big, big virtual hug. And I really can't wait to get to see you in person again. Hopefully it's not too long.
Yeah. You know, hopefully.
I
have to say, we all thought, you know, in this weird quarantine time that things
were going to pass.
And, you know, hopefully they do. Hopefully they do. Shout out doctors, shout out nurses, shout out scientists. And
Yes.
Thank you.
Well,
you know, for everybody.
Absolutely. And yeah, and we'll talk on the phone before then, before
I'm
we see
sure
each other.
So. Yeah. All right, Mon.
All right, John. I'll talk soon. Bye. Big hug. Bye.
Musings of the Artist is audio produced by Aaron Morin, and theme music is by Madison Ward.